This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's Meera Sivasudhi. Welcome to the program. Although still statistically the safest mode of transportation, the terrifying footage of Asiana Airlines Flight 214 crash landing in San Francisco and harrowing images of survivors getting out of the aircraft would give even the most optimistic of travelers cause for concern. The Director General of the Malaysian Department of Civil Aviation with me, Dato' Azharuddin Abdul Rahman, he's here to explain more about security and safety when travelling by air. Welcome to the show, Dato'. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm okay. Thank you for inviting me at BFM.
You know, Dato, we're going to go through some of the roles of the Department of Civil Aviation, what you actually do. But when I was reading, Malaysia is actually rated Category 1 of the United States Federation Aviation Administration. What does that mean?
You see, in as a national aviation authority throughout the world, not many people know this, but we've been audited by the International Civil Aviation Organization to ensure that we comply to the international standards and recommended practices as in the annexes of the ICAO. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when any states or any country which have the airlines flying into United States, they've been audited by the Federal Aviation Administration, the National Aviation Authority of the USA. And the FAA will audit all the states and give a rating. If you comply to the ICAO standards, then you are rated to be Category 1.
Right.
That means that your airlines is able to fly, continue flying into the states. And if you does not comply to the international standards, then you'll be downgraded, you'll be rated as Category 2, and there be some sanctions or other requirements that the FAA might impose on the airlines flying into United States.
Okay, is that a United States Federal Aviation Administration? I mean, is that an organization that we should be benchmarking our standards against, or you know, what about Europe? What about you know the rest of the world?
The currently that the two big national authorities of the world. The FAA, one of them, and the other one is the European. They call themselves the European Aviation Safety Agency. So the world is benchmarking the one of them. And we, Malaysia, because we've been ruled by the British ones, you know, and then we followed, we complied to the British standards. Mm-hmm. And when the British moved to the European Union, EASA, and we, at the same time, moved towards the European standard as well. But we also being guided by the FAA's requirements on design standards, which we have our agreement with the FAA. They call it a BASA, Bilateral Aviation Safety Agreement. That means that if any aircraft designed and manufactured in Malaysia below 10 seats, either made from metal or composite, or any components that made in Malaysia will be recognized by the FAA.
Okay.
And that is something that a big recognition to Malaysia.
Okay.
and to DCA.
Is it a double-edged sword, though? I mean, this is Big Brother we're talking about. There could be very stringent measures. I mean, the airline industry is a very competitive one. Could it work against us benchmarking ourselves against the FAA?
It's not benchmarking that we have to comply to them so much, because internationally, the ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, sets out the policy. And every contracting state to ICAO, the 191 states now, have to comply to the convention. We call it Chicago Convention 1944. And under the convention, they have annexes. They have 18 annexes. Example, Annex 1, personnel licensing, Annex 6, operations of aircraft, Annex 8, airworthiness of aircraft, and so forth. So the minimum requirement we have to comply to is not to the FAA or to the European, but to the annexes of the ICAO. And each country have to have a primary legislation, and we have that legislation, mm-hmm. The Civil Aviation Act 1969, and in the Act, the Minister can make regulations. We have regulations, Malaysia Civil Aviation Regulation 1996. and that's what we have to comply to. All the industry in Malaysia have to comply to the Act and the regulations, and that Act regulation, if you read it, it complies to the annexes, the minimum recommended standard recommended practices of ICAOs.
Right. You know, as the Director General of the Department of Civil Aviation, Dato' Azhar, how would you rate air safety in Malaysia?
I think very good, very good. We have not been experienced any accident, any fatalities, accident involving commercial aircraft for so many years now. Mm-hmm. I think the last
being in the
1970s, the Tanjung Kupang MES 1974. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apart from that, we don't have any. We have accident, yes, but no fatalities.
Okay. Our Air Force, does that fall under the DCA as well?
No. Department of Civil Aviation, We only under our jurisdiction mm-hmm. as a civil aviation department is only on civil aircraft registered in Malaysia.
What is the biggest challenge or hardest task for you, you know, in the air travel security industry?
Security or safety?
That's safety.
Two safety.
Yes, safety.
Safety is to maintain the safety aspect of civil aviation. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you don't want to be too rigid because you should be able to let the industry grow. Sustainable of the industry is very, very important as well. Just to maintain the safety record, the safety aspect of the industry very important because it not only reflects the country's reputation, but also if you have a safe industry, the airlines will attracted to come to Malaysia, and the tourism industry will not be affected. The businessmen can go to A to B doing their business, and also people able to fly safely from A to B or out of the country or into the country safely without any concern. Mm-hmm.
When we talk about air safety, it always, what comes to mind in our minds is probably all the pilots. It is much more than that. I'm sure, Dato. You wanted to shed more light on that.
It is much more than that. I give you an example. If any organization would like to fly their aircraft or use their aircraft for hire and reward, we use the word hire and reward in regulation, then they have to apply to DCA either for air service permit or air service license, air service permit for non-scheduled operations, air service license for scheduled operations. If we have gone through your application and find that you have the resources on paper, i.e. you have the people, you have the business plan, you have, of course, the money, and for the equipment that you're going to use, for the aircraft you're going to use, then we recommend that to the Ministry of Transport for them to hold the license or approval. Having gone through the mill in the Ministry of Transport, then they will say yes or no. And having that provisional permit or license does not give you the right to operate yet until you apply for Air Operator Certificate, AOC. And AOC is a process that we do very thoroughly, that you must have, basically you must have three things. You must have your people to run your operations, and you must have all the documentation that we have to vet through, we have to go through line by line to make sure that you meet our requirements, and you must have the aircraft. And the aircraft, whatever aircraft, have to be certified, have to be registered in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So your pilots, your engineers, where you do your maintenance, will all be vetted through by DCA before we grant any organization and air operator certificate. It's a long process. It's a tedious process, strictly adhered to by the DCA to ensure that you meet all the requirements, and the operators have to meet and comply to the requirements of DCA.
Which brings me to, of course, Malindo. There's been a lot of controversy surrounding Malindo simply because Lion Air doesn't have the best safety record. How did the DCA, you know, sort of look at that and, you know, come up with the approval for Malindo to operate here in Malaysia?
Okay. It's interesting. the perception of people also have to be, have to be explained and to explain here. Malindo Air is a joint venture between Lion Air and organization in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's where Lion Air Link stop. They provide the resources, yes, in terms of money to buy the aeroplanes and so forth. However, Malindo Air have to apply to Malaysia DCA for the air operator certificate or air service license initially, mm-hmm. and air operator certificate. So Malindo Air have to prove to us that they have the people to operate the aircraft, they have the people to maintain the aircraft, and they must have all the documentation that meets our requirements, and they must have the aircraft that meets our standards, and they must have the aircraft that is registered in Malaysia, and they have complied to all that. Okay. So it is a Malaysian company complied to the Malaysian's legislation.
But do you not look at track record at all? The fact that Lion Air has actually had quite a number of mishaps actually in Indonesia?
Lion Air and Malindo is two different mm-hmm. airlines.
But we're sharing resources, aren't we?
No, it's not sharing resources, because Lion Air have a separate AOC that is being issued by the Indonesian DGCA. Malindo Air obtained their AOC from Malaysian DCA. Mm-hmm. And Malindo Air must have a set of people. We call it a post holders. Post holders means that the personnel accountable for what they are doing. Example, the chief pilot, the safety pilot, the trainee pilot, chief engineer, the quality assurance engineer, and headed by a person called accountable manager. And that accountable manager must understand our legislation, must comply to our legislation, must have the responsibility for not only on the commercial side, but importantly, it's responsible over the safety and security of the airline.
Okay.
So they have to comply to our requirement. It's just like MAS, just like Asia, mm-hmm. Orlando Air is one of them.
Right.
It's
so
one
you have
of our operator.
Right. So you have frequent audits and things like that. Do you go in and actually audit the safety requirements for all?
For the AOC process initially, yes, we go thoroughly on the not only on physical audit in their facilities, but also to go through their books, their documentation, their maintenance records, the pilot's record, and so forth. And we do periodic surveillance, auditing of their facilities, and also our pilots in DCA occasionally fly on the aircraft to make sure that the pilots operate the aircraft to meet our requirement.
Okay. Coming up, we'll discuss further on air travel safety. Dato' Azharuddin Abdul Rahman with me, Director General of the Department of Civil Aviation Malaysia. If you have a question for him, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000. Tweet BFM Radio. Coming up, we'll find out whether or not, you know, how the media actually reacts to an accident and or, you know, something relating to flight safety, and whether or not the DCA actually has a control over what's being published. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasudhi. Dato' Azharuddin Abdul Rahman with me, Director General of the Department of Civil Aviation Malaysia. We're discussing air travel safety. I mean, in view of the ASEANA crash in San Francisco, I think a lot of us had questions, as to how we handle a situation like that. I think, Dato', I'm going to play you a clip of how, and I want to know your feedback or have your opinion on how the media should actually respond or, report when it comes to air crashes like these.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Lee Fook, and Bang Ding Ao.
That was a complete hoax, Dato'. And I thought very insensitive, considering a situation like that. Does the Department of Civil Aviation have control over how the media comes across when it comes to accidents like these?
Okay, thank you. Actually, we don't have really control what the media in that aspect. But what we always give the any information of accident. We normally do not give any information of accident because we don't want that kind of reporting, false reporting, or wrongly reported incidents or accidents being put across into the papers, the mainstream media, or even the social medias. It gives a very wrong impression, perception to people. So we normally did not give any inputs, press conference on accident per se, unless you know it is a, you can call it a high profile accident. In that instances. So I hope reporters, the media should play their role in reporting the correct circumstances.
But shouldn't the civil aviation authorities actually be the person giving out the accurate information?
We if instances like this in our legislation, the only authority that can issue statement or accident is the Minister of Transport, because accident investigation is not under the purview of Department of Civil Aviation, although there are regulations to it in the Civil Aviation Regulation 1996, but in Malaysia, the role of accident investigation have been done by a group of accident investigators appointed by the minister, and one of the accident inspectors appointed as the chief accident inspector, and the chief accident inspector the chief inspector of the accidents report direct to the minister, and all the reports goes to the minister. It's the minister.
Do you think that needs to change? Because I mean, really, Dato' Azhar, with the onset of social media, timeliness is extremely crucial before, you know, things like this come out. For an example, you know, all the wrong names. It's not something to fool around with. And the minute you talk about the minister getting involved and things like, he's got a lot of other things to do as well. And the faster we come out with accurate information, doesn't that work better for the public as well as for the whole, you know? You're talking about reputation of an airline here.
Yeah, in a way, yes, I agree. But then you must understand that sometimes we cannot tell out too many things during the accident.
Fair
because
enough.
Accident investigation takes a long process. We have to make sure that we really do a thorough investigation to find the causes or the probable causes of the accident. So any press statement that we issue accident investigation might be too premature for us to give out, you know. But we give out the statement to say that an accident has happened. What are the injuries or fatalities if there's any, but not to the extent of what really happens.
Yeah, no, and, fair enough. We're not talking about that. Yeah. But just
reporting.
So
you have to understand that it's very difficult for us to give the statement of such nature.
Right. So ideally, still reports on what has happened, or you know, to immediate, you know, reaction, still has to come from the minister.
Yes, in a way, yes.
It still has to come from the minister.
That's what the regulation says. That's what the regulation says.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we need to write to the minister to change that. We have a question here from someone who's texted in. How would you rate the air safety of private liners, such as, you know, especially flying clubs? Does that come under the purview of the DCA?
Yes, if all the flying clubs or the flying schools in Malaysia have been approved by Malaysia, the flying schools, the flying clubs. Yeah, we approve their existence, and they have to comply to our requirements. Yes, there are one or two incidents involving flying schools, but if you look at the total number of flying hours that they have in Malaysia, the total number of aircraft that flies in Malaysia, I think it's very, very small.
Okay. When you talk about flying schools, we have, how many do we have in the country at the moment?
We have five flying schools now in Malaysia, one in Malacca, one in Langkawi, one in Kota Baru, one in Terengganu, one in Sandakan.
A lot of, I always say, you know, little boys have a dream of becoming a pilot, and many of them want to, you know, see that dream through. We do have quite a number of trained pilots in the country, many of whom have not been employed. Should they be going into learning how to fly for commercial airlines?
The joy of becoming a pilot, or the image of pilot wearing uniform with epaulets, you know, four bars, even every small boy would like to pick, you know, because of that, a lot of them like to become a pilot. But I hope the so-called up-and-coming pilot wants to become a pilot, and the parents itself must realize that the airline industry is facing a lot of
challenges,
obstacles, you know.
In what sense?
Economic uncertainty, the increase of fuel price, and competition amongst them, and then lots and lots of things, you know. So airlines only recruit new pilots if they have new aircraft, and they will have new aircraft. Either they replace the old aircraft. Even then, they have their own pilots that could be retrained to pilot the new aircraft. Or they increase their routes, and they need aircraft to fly to the new routes, so they employ new pilots. What has happened in Malaysia is that a number of years ago, when AirAsia started, and they've been increasing their purchase of new aircraft. MES also have new aircraft. The demand of pilots is there in Malaysia. So they have recruited school leavers as cadets to their pilot, to the pilot scheme. So much so that other school leavers who are unable to go into the airline pilot training scheme went on their own to be trained in these flying schools. So you see the flying school mushrooming, so much so that at one time we have 8 flying schools. Mm-hmm. But the downturn of the economy situation, if you remember the SARS outbreak, the increase of fuel price, have affected the airlines badly, not only in Malaysia, not only in this region, but globally. And they are not increasing their capacity, the airline not increasing their routes, some of them cut their routes, and they are not taking pilots anymore. And because of that, those trainee pilots who have been trained and achieve their ambition to get their pilot license, unable to be employed. And this is something that the parents should understand, that if you go on your own, train to be a pilot, a job is not guaranteed.
It's not a guaranteed thing. What does it take to be, you know, a great pilot, really? Because when we read in
a great pilot is somebody that have the patience to be a pilot. The interest, of course, must be there, and very disciplined, because a pilot must be not only as when they fly, but also when they are not flying. So they must rest well, they must comply to the rest period, and they must maintain their health, because pilot have to go, although they have to go through medical checkup every year for below 40 years old, and when they are above that, every 6 months, that they have to maintain their health, they have to maintain their discipline on and off the aircraft.
Contrary to popular perception, I think we have some of the best pilots in the world.
We have.
Here in the country.
We have the best pilot in the world now. Because if we are being licensed by, or the pilot license has been issued by DCA, mm-hmm. if any of the pilot that been licensed by DCA, I think they are very marketable.
A lot
of our pilots are now flying for foreign airlines in the Middle East, in China, in Korea, but even in Indonesia.
Everywhere. There is also this perception that safety levels in a full commercial airline is much higher than a low-cost carrier, for an example. And this is a worldwide perception. Would you say there's any truth to that?
No, I think it's only a perception. One, because the legislation that is imposed on legacy airline or low-cost carrier is the same. They have to comply to the same Civil Aviation Act in Malaysia. They have to comply to the same Civil Aviation Regulation 1996 in Malaysia. So they have to have the same requirement. So that's both of them are in the same level field in terms of legislation they have to comply to.
Right. I think there's all this perception because low-cost carriers seem to have a very quick turnaround time. And hence, you know, this whole idea of safety comes to mind when it comes to passengers.
Yes, they have quick turnaround time. But for them to do it, for them to turn around in such a quick manner, they have to comply to the requirement of DCA. So every transit, we call it transit, KLIA or Penang or which airport, that they have to turn around. And DCA inspectors have to ensure that they meet our requirement. 20 minutes, 25 minutes, they have to do all they have to do during the transit. Turnaround inspection, maintenance engineer have to inspect the aircraft, go around the aircraft. The pilots have to do after landing inspection, before takeoff and all that thing. And yeah, all aspects of maintenance and operations during the turnaround have to be complied with.
Right. We always hear of pilot error, but you know, I thought we'll take on a more positive approach. And the one case that really, really sticks in my mind is actually Captain Sullen Berger, who landed his plane in the Hudson River in 2009. And this is what really happened.
When did you realize that these birds had seriously damaged the aircraft?
When I felt, heard, and smelled the evidence of them going into the engines. I heard the noises, I felt the engine vibrations of the damage being done to the engines, and I smelled what I described at the time, and I still would, as a burned bird smell being brought from the engine air into the conditioning system of the airplane.
Did you realize right away the engines are failing?
Yes, it was obvious to me from the very moment that we lost the thrust that this was a critical situation. Losing thrust on both engines at a low speed, at a low altitude, over one of the most densely populated areas on the planet.
What were some of the things you had to do to make this landing successful?
I needed to touch down with the wings exactly level. I needed to touch down with the nose slightly up. I needed to touch down at a descent rate that was survivable. And I needed to touch down just above our minimum flying speed, but not below it. And I needed to make all these things happen simultaneously. The physiological reaction I had to this was strong, and I had to force myself to use my training and force calm on the situation.
Was that a hard thing to do?
No. It just took some concentration.
You know, the captain's skills were actually described as the true delivery by a master. At the same time, Professor, there's also this stake that some pilots have thousands of hours of experience and still make errors. What's your comment on that?
The accident that happens in the Hudson River have proved many things. One, if you fly the aircraft according to the correct procedures, emergency procedures, after a bird strike, you're able to land the aircraft on water. Survival, all the passengers survive. And this shows that also the training of the pilot has been done in the most correct manner. And all pilots, although they've been flying so many hours, thousands of hours, still they have to go through recurrent training. And recurrent training is very, very important. Recurrent training, not only that you fly in the straight and level regime, but when they are to be trained in the simulators, they be subject to all sorts of emergency situation, engine shutdown, both engine shutdown, you know, stall, anything that is possible catastrophe on the aircraft, and the pilot is required to fly the aircraft back on ground to land on ground if all these eventualities. That is the professionalism of the pilot. So there's somebody say that that's why pilots have been paid a lot, and not only able to fly A to B with no incident, but also they have to ensure that if there's any incident, any faults on the aircraft, they should be able to land the aircraft safely.
But it irks me when I hear people comment and say things like, "Easy, what your job? Just put on autopilot and sit down and, you know, relax." So not be.
Because you always have you have to, in the back of your mind, that anything can happen, and to be prepared with all the emergency process. Although it's written down, but you got to do it in the most professional manner and most disciplined manner. Mm-hmm. And that's where your training comes in, your discipline comes in. That's where your knowledge of the aircraft and your airmanship comes in. Airmanship is very, very important.
What do you mean by that?
The airmanship, that you fly the aircraft, you know, you fly the aircraft. Doesn't mean that you fly, yes, you fly a machine, you fly a $1 million machine, but you're still a pilot. You are a pilot, you are flying, just like you fly in a small aircraft. Mm-hmm. So your airmanship is very important.
Dr. Azhar, are you a pilot yourself?
No, I'm not.
Okay, your background and what got you into the Department of Civil Aviation?
Long time ago, mm-hmm. After Form 5, I applied. Actually, I applied both to be a pilot and licensed aircraft engineer in MAS. I never to be a pilot because my eyesight is not that good. So I was taken in by MAS as a trainee aircraft maintenance engineer in 1976. They sent me to New Zealand to be trained in New Zealand for 3 years. Came back, got my license in 1981, and I was in Malaysia Airlines for 5 years as an aircraft maintenance engineer. And then I joined Department of Civil Aviation in 1985 until now.
Right, fantastic. Are you enjoying what you do?
I do. I really enjoy what I'm doing because aviation is something that you are learning things every day, and it's a very dynamic industry. Everything is. It's not a routine job, and you're not only learning from what you read, from what you hear, but also learning from other people as well. And it is something very important. The incidents that we used to experience, or what we know from other countries, also is a learning process. But we cannot wait for incident to happen. Mm-hmm. That's what we are here. To ensure that serious incidents will not happen. So we are relying on reports and what we call is safety management system now, that any small incident will be reported and analyzed by the department to see the trend, and we nick it,
nip it in the bud
to ensure that it won't happen.
Any regrets that you didn't become a pilot?
There is more
leeway as far as eyesight is concerned now.
It is. There are more leeway now, but no regret. I think, although I bear a big responsibility, but I'm enjoying it. And I got a good team in DCA to support. I think the industry in Malaysia also is a very good industry. No compromise on safety, and they knew it. And everybody worked together to ensure that the industry remain safe and secure. Mm-hmm.
As passengers, should we be concerned about, or should we, you know, be alarmed by, you know, crashes like ASEANA?
Not really, because you got to know what exactly happened. We don't know what exactly happened. What we know, what is documented, which I'm not going through it. We have to wait for the final or the official investigation,
which can take
report.
A very long time, actually.
It is, because you have to look at every angle of the incident. Although the accident looked very simple, you know, flying the pilot, as reported, as we read, fly on visual, during which the San Francisco Airport instrument landing system was switched off for whatever reason, for maintenance reason, I think. And then the puppy, the precision approach path indicator was switched off. They're flying visual on the Boeing 777. We don't know what's happening in the cockpit itself. Mm-hmm. So the investigators have to rely on what they have investigated so far in the cockpit from the interviews of the pilots, and they also have to look at the technical aspect, the engines, the black box information that they, I'm sure, downloaded and analyzed it right now. Both the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder. There's okay. lots and lots of work to do.
Of course. Do you usually have a deadline to come up with a report?
No, there should not be a deadline, because you have to cover at all angles.
Can the public actually get access to reports that are made public?
You must have interest in the report. Let's say you are the pilot or the owner of the aircraft, then you can have the report. So there must be a need why you need the report.
Is there a reason why it is not made public?
You can make public. There is a provision and regulation that you can make public, but then you got to go through the process of making it public, and you have to apply to the Minister of Transport. That's what currently in the regulation now.
Okay.
You can make public.
Your final message, Dato' Azza, on air travel safety in Malaysia.
I think the perception of the people is very important, that our country have a very good safety record, and that low cost carrier does not mean that they, you know,
compromise on safety.
They have still complied to the regulations, as also for the legacy airline. And I think if any information they would like to have, then they either contact the Department of Civil Aviation or try to get the reliable sources for any information on safety and security.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me today.
Dato' Azharuddin Abdul Rahman, Director General of the Department of Civil Aviation Malaysia, on air travel safety on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.